This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
The BFM Breakfast Grill, connecting you to the top people and ideas. Presented by U Mobile.
Welcome to The Breakfast Grill. I'm Roshan Connison. Like many industries, gym and health clubs have been adversely impacted and disrupted by the pandemic, from safety concerns keeping members away to changing guidelines and SOPs, all of which make an already challenging operating environment even more difficult. To discuss the viability of health and fitness clubs in the new normal, I speak with Simon Flynn, Group CEO of Evolution Wellness. Evolution Wellness operates in 5 countries in Southeast Asia and Hong Kong and owns franchises such as legacy brands like Fitness First and Celebrity Fitness, as well as newer, more boutique brands like Fire Fitness and Go Fit. Simon, welcome to The Breakfast Grill.
Good morning.
So, Simon, it's not exactly been a great year for gyms. How bad has 2020 been?
Well, Roshan, I'm sure like many businesses, we've experienced a really hard time, an unprecedented set of circumstances, which has meant, you know, quite a bit of pain for the business and for the industry as a whole. In March, mid-March, we saw the first of the lockdowns across our markets. We exist in Hong Kong, Indonesia, Malaysia, Philippines, Singapore, and Thailand. And since mid-March up until just September, we were still experiencing long periods of closure. The Philippines being the market that closed early and opened more latterly. Other markets have been a bit topsy-turvy, where we've opened and had a false start and had to close again as governments have clarified SOPs and worked out how to align ministries, et cetera. So it's been particularly difficult. We have 7,000 staff that we need to look after and support. And you can imagine that's been quite a stress on the business when we've been zero revenue for quite many weeks.
How hard have your revenues and profits been hit by the closures we've seen and just general concerns over the pandemic?
Well, we had a really good Q1. We were sort of on track with our expectations, calendar Q1. And then when COVID-19 hit, clearly we went to pretty much zero revenue across the board, a rather rapid wind down country by country. And we rallied very fast and held weekly calls with all stakeholders. We call them business continuity planning meetings, and made sure that we got on top of the controllables as fast as we could, stemmed cash outflows, went into very tenacious negotiations with landlords in terms of rent abatement and so on. And that made a big difference. We reduced our cash outflows by about 2/3 in the period. But of course, with long periods of zero revenue, that meant we had to knuckle down and think, what else could we do? How agile could we be to respond to this in new ways, and look for new ways to engage our customers, certainly to retain them also, so that when we can open back up again, our customers are still with us. So we were hit with our revenues all the way down to zero. Our markets have built back again, and we're around about the 70th percentile in aggregate at the moment. But we have quite a bit of hope, actually, because in Thailand, where COVID has had the least impact, we are across the 90th percentile again in terms of revenue, where our clubs are getting more towards normal again. So that gives us some hope that in a world where people are confident in the measures we've taken, the SOPs, all our staff's wearing masks and all the protocols you can imagine, appropriate spacing, etc. There is hope that we can restore revenues to something like they were before. But notwithstanding, we do recognize that we're going to have to be careful about our cost management and how we perhaps look for different revenue streams in order to carry on building value for the business.
Simon, has membership retention been difficult at this point, especially with concerns over safety and SOPs?
Well, when COVID hit, we pretty much saw consistent results across markets of somewhere between 10 and 20% of our members leaving. And then we had a big chunk going on to what we call freeze. And of course, during that time, we extended free freeze. In other words, we're not able to render a service. Members were able to suspend their accounts without charge for that period. And we saw about 30% of our members remaining on freeze once we'd carried on with the reopening. So now, again, let me speak to the positive side of things. because Thailand, which is our most recovered market, we only have 5.3% of our members on freeze presently, which is kind of normal. That's what you'd expect most of the time anyway, with a kind of, you know, people transient and taking breaks or going on leave or whatever it might be. But other markets, we still see in excess of 20% still on freeze. Part of that is to do with social distancing and the restrictions that puts on the capacity. And part of it's to do with confidence, which is understandable, particularly the over 50 segment. We find a few more are staying away, perhaps because they have an elder generation in the household, and there's a bit of nervousness around that. But on that point, if I may say, you know, we've got some really interesting data, which, you know, as far as the Malaysia market's concerned, for example, there are 3 known cases of our members testing positive for COVID. No evidence of any transmission within our club environment. And of those 3 members, that's 3 members out of 90,000, we've experienced 800,000 member check-ins in the year per 1 recorded case of COVID across our gym locations. So, you know, whilst it's out there, it would suggest that the measures in place are very beneficial, and you know, we're pleased that we can provide members with a safe environment in which to maintain their health goals. You know, it's so important for mental wellness, not to mention physical health.
That's encouraging to hear, Simon. But from a Malaysian context here, when I think about a gym struggling or the gym industry struggling, I immediately think back to a few years ago when the True Fitness franchise went bust seemingly out of the blue. In this current challenging environment ahead, should we be concerned about your ability to keep the gym lights on?
Oh, I think it's a very different set of circumstances, Roshan. I mean, I don't particularly want to speak about former competition, but the business models were very, very different. Evolution Wellness has been around in its various guises, in different names, Fitness First originally coming together with Celebrity Fitness and then building and acquiring other brands, you know, for over 2 decades. And that's because of our robust approach to financial governance and to have the right financial structures and capitalization in place. The brand that you referenced had a different approach and therefore had a different outcome. So I think it's a bit different. Notwithstanding, there's a lot of stress on the sector in general. And it's important that, you know, landlords recognize the need to step in and help. You know, of course, landlords are under pressure, but we're grateful for the assistance we've received in many cases where landlords have stepped in and recognized the value that we bring in terms of daily footfall from early morning all the way through to the evening. And again, any landlord who's got a fitness outlet or a wellness outlet on their premises, I'd encourage you to think long term and support your tenants. It's really important for the industry.
And you know, you mentioned the business model there. What is the core business model of Evolution Wellness? Is profit driven by continuous opening of new gym branches to drive subscription fees, or is it different?
Well, it's twofold. We have a core business, you know, our long-standing estate we have some around 175 outlets now across various brands. But our core estate, it comprises of the 2 bigger brands, Fitness First and Celebrity Fitness. Those are the brands that we have steady growth and continual maintenance of our facilities. And that's a subscription service. So, again, you know, the importance of the business model is recognized here, that we're not a business that takes term memberships up front. That's not our approach. That keeps us on our feet. It means that we've got to be on point for our members so that they want to continue coming back. But Evolution Wellness has also got its mind on the growth sector. So we're looking into the connected fitness space. You may be aware of a brand called Five Elements that we acquired a couple of years ago. Five Elements is a wellness brand with a hotel in Bali, which was its founding point. We went on to build on the brand architecture to create something we call Five Elements Habitat in Hong Kong. And we have expansion plans for that too. So part of our growth engine is not only about capital that we would deploy, but also about licensing our brands. So our high-value, low-price brand GoFit, our boutique fitness brand Fire, and Five Elements are 3 brands that we're pushing through the license model. And we have a number of LOIs that have been signed in recent months. And we hope that we'll sign our first contracts, in fact, this month, where we can go beyond borders and outside of Southeast Asia.
Well, is that going to be the focus of your of Evolution Wellness's expansion plan, licensing through those brands?
And it'll certainly be weighted towards that. You know, that's a benefit to us at a Topco level, because that would be supportive of margin, where we're deploying less CapEx but have additional revenue streams. But at the same time, we're going to continue with our core brands. We have five sites that we're committed to open into 2021. In fact, just a couple of weeks ago, we opened another celebrity fitness site in Kuningan City in Jakarta, which, you know, we committed to it before COVID, and we've seen through our commitment and open it, and it's gone down very well with the community. So we're really pleased with that. You know, despite the unfortunate timing, it's something that's been really well received. So we're committed to steady growth with our core brands and accelerated growth through the licensing model.
How big do you want licensing to be? Do you guys have a number in terms of contribution to top line?
Well, not in particular, but in terms of the size of the opportunity, you know, pre-COVID, we were expecting that in a number of years we would be able to achieve 1,000 licensees of our GoFit product. And when you look at the size of the market, that's moderate in ambition, really, when we think about the, you know, the globe as the opportunity. I think we probably should temper that now, or at least push it out, you know, a year or maybe 18 months or so before we can hit that kind of ambition. But I would expect that, you know, over time, as the years go by, we probably have a balanced portfolio where, you know, maybe up to half the business is outside of the existing domain and into the license space.
I was speaking with Simon Flint, Group CEO of Evolution Wellness. Up next is the big franchise gym model outdated. Keep it here to the Breakfast Grill to find out.
You are listening to the BFM Breakfast Grill, brought to you by U Mobile.
Welcome back to The Breakfast Grill. I'm Roshan Kanesan. This morning, I'm speaking with Simon Flint, Group CEO of Evolution Wellness. Simon, with the current conditions that we're seeing with the pandemic, will there be closures in the region, especially for those with leases that are about to expire? Is that something that you're going to use to maybe shore up resources?
It would be remarkable if we weren't to see a couple of clubs close down over time. But I should emphasize that that's quite normal anyway, with a portfolio of 170 plus. There's always a tail of sort of older legacy leases where we may close one and open a more modern one. But having said that, at the moment we have, we expect probably two clubs to be at the tail end and to be closed. But equally, we net growth, we see more clubs opening than closing, which, you know, in spite of the environment, you know, that's very encouraging to anticipate that. And should we have a vaccine that comes into the marketplace sometime in 2021, then we'll have even more confidence about the growth of the sector.
What else have you done to shore up resources to navigate the pandemic? Have you taken on more debt or maybe requested more capital from the owners?
Well, we have great support from our owners who have great belief in the sector, which is why we've seen the various investments in the last 2.5-3 years. And the organic growth of an investment into GoFit, the acquisition of Fire, et cetera. So we have very good access to capital as we need. And we do have debt facilities that we can draw down upon as we need. As you can imagine, we had some, you know, net cash outflow during the closure period. But now we're thankfully, we are alive and back on in every market. Every one of our clubs is currently open and trading. So as members come back and their billing is switched back on, you know, we have some good light at the end of the tunnel.
Simon, all these measures and support is a good thing to have in this time, but are naturally temporary in nature and simply really about buying time. How much time does all this buy you to either wait out the pandemic or wait for a vaccine or it maybe figure out a new business model?
Well, I'm not that pessimistic, to be honest, but I'll talk about a new business model in just a moment because it's a really good point. But I'm not that pessimistic because many of the landlords are working with us to recut our rents going forward, and they recognize that we need some rebasing. So we generally operate on renewable leases, and we enter, you know, 3 by 3 by 3 years kind of thing, and that can be for 4 or 5 terms generally, but we always have options at those 3 year periods. So now is a very good time to renegotiate. Everybody's aware that online retail has picked up and bricks and mortar is a little bit more challenged, but the fitness community always drives people on a daily basis. And that therefore, you know, we're in a strong position to negotiate and recut those rents. So we're enthusiastic about that. But to answer your question, which is really important, you know, about switching gears and looking into different space, we've got a few pilots in the virtual space going on. So every market has an offering of some sort. In Malaysia, on home territory here, we have a subscription model, which is just 25 ringgit a month for the consumption of the Celebrity Fitness or the Fitness First brands. And we have another proposition, which is limited to 20 people. And that's for the Fire brand. In fact, it launches in a couple of weeks, where that's two ways. So we can see you, we can see your face, we can see your name, and we can interact with you in a virtual sense. So one is a bit more high volume and low price, and one is a bit more premium and more intimate and interactive. And that's really at the boutique end. So the investment in the virtual piece has been really important. We launched our app in fact, at the front end of the COVID period, and accelerated the rollout because that was very important in track and trace. So that allowed us to help gather data on where our members are. But importantly, that also leaves very data-rich footprints for us to market and remarket to our members, knowing their preferences, knowing exactly what they're booking, at what kind of at what time of day, so we can remarket to them in more intelligent ways. So investment in the digital space has been really important for us.
That said, Simon, at 25 ringgit a month for memberships to digital memberships to Fitness First or Celebrity Fitness, that's a fraction of the normal membership, which runs around, I think, at least 200 ringgit a month. This doesn't sound like a sustainable model, at least with the current situation, or at least the current infrastructure of how the business has been built. What's the plan to close this revenue deficit?
Well, you'll recognize that so far we have, you know, like I mentioned, in our strongest markets, revenue recovery has been to the 90th percentile, which we expect in all markets as things progress with COVID. The timeline on that, you know, is market by market, but we're optimistic that we'll get there. The virtual piece, yes, it is a fraction, but you'll recognize that that's not limited to our existing members. So for the cost of administering one class, you know, the attendance numbers virtually can be multiples of what they are in bricks and mortar. So the economics of it actually rack and stack. But on top of that, we also recognize that the connected fitness space is important. You know, you've probably heard of the rise of Peloton, Tonal and the like. And we've recently made an investment into this space too. I can't talk too much about that yet. We'll probably do some PR around that in a couple of months. But that's a space that we're very keen to play on, not so much disrupting, but complementing the commercial space by bringing equipment in that can be used both at home and in the commercial environment, where people can track their data and monitor their progress. So we recognize that that's an important place to play, and we intend to do so.
Simon, overall, Evolution Wellness is a much bigger player with negotiation power, access to debt and capital, as well as strong backers in your owners. While the current situation is challenging, the pandemic is arguably straining smaller gyms and health clubs more. Are you actively looking out for deals and brands to buy at this juncture?
We've always got our eye, you know, COVID or not, we've always got our eye on what opportunities there may be in the marketplace. And in fact, a club that we recently opened in Kuningan City in Jakarta. It's opened as a Celebrity Fitness club. That was formerly a club of one of our competitors that didn't quite make it. And we've taken that one on and held on to, you know, a good number of members who were otherwise going to lose their health club. And those opportunities do pop up from time to time. So we are looking across the landscape to see what opportunities there will be, with caution, of course, because we're not through the pandemic just yet, but absolutely, we'll always look for those kinds of opportunities where they make sense.
Part of any CEO's job includes managing the relationships and expectations of stakeholders, particularly owners. What's the hurdle rate that's been set for Evolution Wellness?
Well, you know, as a privately held company, we don't tend to get into too much of the data. But, you know, if I were to talk about the way we would look to achieve payback, typically our fastest payback models will be around about the 3-year mark, and then the premium end, which carries a higher yield and a higher customer lifetime value, would be a year or so added on to that. And that's what we've managed to achieve thus far. I think obviously with the last few months, you know, we'll all be cut some slack in that respect. And we think it'll probably take maybe a year to build back to those kind of levels. If a vaccine were to come sooner, we see that as been a, you know, very quick jump back, because as we continue to survey the marketplace, the keenness is there, but for this, you know, obstacle of confidence. But again, you know, I go back to the data that we sit on. You know, one reported case amongst our Malaysia members for every 800,000 check-ins tells us that somewhere soon, you know, people will realize that it's time to get back and exercise safely with all the SOPs in place.
All right. Simon, let's look towards the future. I think it was reported last year in the Wall Street Journal that both your owners were looking to sell off Evolution Wellness for $1 billion at that point. Now, based on your communication with the owners at this point, what is the long-term goal for Evolution Wellness?
Well, the long-term goal remains the same. You know, any owning company will look, a private equity firm will look to monetize at some point. And clearly what's happened with COVID means that that timeline is pushed back. There are various opportunities out there. In you know, strategic exit possibilities, in the particularly in the wellness and the medical field potentially, private equity. There's a lot of dry powder out there at the moment. I'm sure that it's going to remain dry in our sector for a while because people will want the confidence of a full recovery. But really, what this moment has taught us is the ambition we've had around that licensing piece I mentioned, the investment in technology-driven solutions and the acceleration in that space, that's been, you know, that we've doubled down on that really.
Last year or so, I think the same report from the journal reported that a listing in Thailand in 2020 might be the exit plan there at that point, though. Obviously, that's not panned out the way the journal reported. Is an IPO on the cards at all in the near term?
I think to be realistic, you know, one would not imagine that an IPO is realistic in the near term. It was something that we had some very strong guidance and some very early interest in. Last year, Thailand is a fantastic market for us. We have both Fitness First and Celebrity Brands there now, with 34 clubs. It's a big chunk of our bottom line contribution. So it seemed like it would make a lot of sense. And you know, we were advised that it would be you know, something that would be very well received in that part of the world. But realistically, we have to park that thought for the moment and, you know, focus our efforts on the way we look at it is four phases, actually. First of all, we talk about survive, then we talk about recovery, then build, and then thrive. And frankly, at the moment, I think we're on the cusp of the survive recovery phase and you know, honing our efforts on these growth initiatives that allow us to move on this fitness to wellness spectrum, bringing in the supplement side, being more holistic about how we treat our customers, bringing technology to the fore. I should mention actually PT at home. We're also doing personal training at home, leveraging technology as well. So additional revenue streams that have been really, we've been forced to think about at a faster rate because of COVID may possibly serve as well as we look to exit at the right time. But, you know, we've got to get our heads down and see those phases through, and then we can think about how we exit.
All right. So fourth phase there, thriving. When you are thriving again, will Thailand still be the target location for an IPO, or are other locations in consideration?
I would have to leave that to the house upstairs to advise them. Things change a lot. Markets change and sentiments change. You know, there's some, you know, potential political and economic challenges in Thailand ahead anyway. So I'm not the one to say that will be. That will be with other people to figure out. But as a management team, we're really focused on hitting those goals. And as we do that, then our options remain open.
Simon, on that note, thank you so much for your time this morning.
Thank you very much, Roshan.
I was speaking with Simon Flint, Group CEO of Evolution Wellness, and this has been The Breakfast Grill. I'm Roshan Karnison for BFM 89.9.
The Breakfast Grill is brought to you by U-Mobile, unleashing unlimited potential every day.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.